The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is February 1st, 2016, if you can believe that, and we are sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com, Sorinex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Hearts Collision, that's for New York State residents only, 518. 477. I got to make sure I got the right number. Is it 57? No, 518-477-7937. Don't forget to tell Lori and Alex I sent you. Also, Steven Santangelo, he's on here every month with us. Unleash your strength with relentless metabolic endurance through 100% pure, wholesome organic foods. Athlete's Choice is the only product with the ultimate results you're looking for. Contact Steven at primalcreations@aol.com or on Facebook at STEPHEN.SANTANGELO.75. Tell them we sent you. www.grasslandbeef.com. That's our good friend John Wood. Also, you can contact him through U.S. Wellness Meats. This is the stuff, man, loaded with CLAs and omega-3s, and he is grass-finished from start to finish, as they say. That's very important because a lot of these people are telling you that, and they're not. Also, John sells grass-fed lamb, bison, free-range poultry, wild-caught seafood, raw honey, and other wellness products. So go out to www.grasslandbeef.com. Jason Fulner, planayearofworkouts.com. You can get that through his website or on Amazon Prime for $5. This is a workout book, strictly records them. This gentleman's a Marine. I mean, this thing is neat and compact. On the 24th workout, there's a section to track your progress and set new goals, and that's what we want to do. And most of all, besides him being in martial arts and weightlifting, this guy listens to Motivation and Muscle in his shed. That's what I love about who we got associated here. Guys and gals, man, it's the real deal. I love it. StrongerGrip.com, that's Ryan Pitts, he's made gear for 10 years. Stronger Grip has made gear for the NFL, college teams, Hollywood actors, arm wrestling, and you've seen his trophies on ESPN. He's also been featured in Men's Health magazine. He's made custom hammers for Mick Dodge and thousands of strength athletes, men and women, just like us. StrongerGrip.com, and don't forget, we're running that contest with Ryan starting today, and it goes to right through St. Patrick's Day. On March 17th, if you've seen that beautiful sledgehammer he built, FBC, black, it's all embossed with our logo on it. It's 25 pounds empty. You can put about 10 to 15 in the handle itself. It holds a total of 83 pounds of shot. It is smooth as can be. I've been using it now for two workouts. If you want to enter in this, and we encourage you to win this hammer because this hammer is around $350, all you have to do is do a video of your best lift, whatever it is. We don't care, anything. Send it, upload it to YouTube, and on the subject line, put FBC and Stronger Grip with a dash and what the lift is, and you can go down below and explain it in detail. Do not forget to leave an email address or a phone number or both so we can contact you when someone wins this beautiful hammer. So go out and check that out. We're going to be announcing it, you know, obviously in every show. Get involved. We want you in. Also, too, the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle, that's on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Free ebook. Download it, leave your email address, I promise you, no spam. All you have to do is commit and take action. Strength times power equals success, and the Winner's Circle, those are my two biggest products to date. They're all on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Check them out. I stand behind everything. Everything you see on this stuff I've done or am doing, or I'm doing more stuff now. FiorelloBarbellCo.com. And the biggest thing is sponsorship for this show. because it's a big nut to fill every month. Come aboard with us. Right now, we're still running this special, $100 to sponsor shows. I do 5 to 15 podcast shows a week. Nobody in this industry does that much. I work 7 days a week. I'm fully dedicated. And don't forget, $30 of that money goes to muscular dystrophy. Right now, with the cold in the Northeast, the kids get flu shots. And as you all know, my brother Jimmy, both sites are dedicated in his memory. He got a common cold, and he died in pneumonia. So it's very important. We're going to become more and more involved with MDA as we grow bigger and bigger. Go out to Fiorello Barbell Co. or MotivationMuscle.com. Fill out the form. Let's be together for at least 25 years and be part of our millions of listeners. And don't forget this. The next 25 years of your life will be great. Stick with us. Join my family. Today, we got a great friend of the show. This guy is a wealth of knowledge. I could probably say a number of other accolades, which you probably will get into. We have Richard Soren on today, and he's been on with us before, and he knows I'm a big Anthony DiTillo fan, and he and I have talked about him. Richard's seen a lot of stuff. He's been around his stuff, and I love having him on. He's a wealth of knowledge. He is the owner. I believe he's a co-owner, but he can correct me on that, of Sorenex Equipment. One thing they sponsored me with, they sent me a beautiful trap bar, which is oversized, which fits in the power rack to pull, and you can press overhead. Obviously, his areas of expertise, too, throwing shot put, discus, Olympic weightlifting, he's power lifted. He's just a strength trainer. He trains athletes. And you know the biggest thing, I discovered him years ago through Milo. This guy is Mr. Grip, and I mean seriously. And you look at the numbers he's still pulling and putting up, it's incredible. It's amazing to see, you know, here's a guy that's not 20 years old that is ripping more weight off the ground than most 20-year-olds. So, Richard, welcome to Motivation Muscle. Anything you want to add with a bio, Happy New Year. We're glad to have you here. And he and I are going to talk about some of his favorite lifts he's seen in the lifters, which I can't wait. So welcome to the show, sir.
Eric, thank you so much. It's a nice, bright morning out, and I'm excited to talk with you and my other friends. And I so often reflect back on how rich a life I've had. I've been driven, I guess, by a passion, but I've been so blessed to be around fine lifters, trainers, athletes, and actually make it a living, a life out of that passion. So I've been privy to a lot of things, and my training has been molded by seeing firsthand what some of the greats of all time have done, and I try to give back as much as they've given me.
Yep. You know what the amazing thing is, too? I mean, like, you parlayed a dream, a passion, just like I'm doing here, started with nothing. And, you know, you read these Cinderella stories all the time, but I don't think you can ever get enough of it. Just briefly go over, how you started. I know how influential with your parents and everything was, but let's get into, obviously, you saw a need for equipment. So let's just get into that a little bit, and then we'll slide right into some of these lifts that you've seen and these people you've been around that really not only inspired you, maybe like me in some ways, really kind of put a mark on you, made you want to be better or drive harder. So why don't you take it away, Richard, and let's start that way if you don't mind.
Sure. I always had a passion for strength, and I remember one of the first movies I ever was taken to by my family was Hercules Unchained, of all things. And I think my mother took me to it. And they would always make sure, of course, the only media at that time were magazines. We weren't lucky enough to have the internet by any means back then. So what we knew about the greats, we saw either with our own eyes or we saw in magazines. I always have been very mechanical, and I would look at things not for what they were, but what possibly they could be. And I was only a child, so I would always tinker with things. And I had a passion for weightlifting. And of course, I didn't have two nickels to rub together. So I made in sixth grade wood shop while they were building little tables, I was building weightlifting benches. it goes so far back in my psyche and my development. It was always meant to be. I I started my business first. I was a teacher for 7 years, and I enjoyed it. And I try to involve all the students, which to this day still come back to me and tell me that some of their success in life has been the discipline I've showed them to take things in hand and do it themselves, not just sit there and complain or get someone else to do it. But I started by meager means with building playgrounds, and as far as with hand axes and hammers and hand augers, and I didn't have enough money to for a wheelbarrow, so I used my wife's car's trunk for a wheelbarrow to mix concrete.
Yep.
An aspirin bottle filled with water to use for a level. And I look outside now, and there's a 100,000 square foot building filled with lasers, CNC machines, and 45 people working. Towards my dream was just to be involved with strength. It wasn't about to make the money, but it followed so closely in the days you relate back to at the Elizabeth YMCA. With some of the greats, David Shaw, Dave Draper, I trained with, Anthony DiTillo, Desi Band. All these were my buddies. They were just people I trained with. They weren't anyone special, but they were very particular people that stood out in the crowd. And I listened to them and just absorbed all they had to say or what they did, which even motivated me further.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to hit on one thing before you go on.
Yeah.
You say there are a particular type. What is it, do you think? I mean, you've been in this industry and out with a lot of lifters, man. What is there one thing that sticks out when you say, like, particular about them? What is there something that sticks out you see in a and I don't care. Let's face it. You don't have to be world's strongest man. You know, you got Anthony DiTillo. I'm going to go back to him because he's one of my – and David Shaw has been on the show. Exemplary people. But they were a class in their own. You know, they didn't have the trophies and the Adelaides like a lot of people do. But is there one particular thing, just even with those two guys, that you saw – you saw a pattern maybe of athletes that you could pinpoint?
The one thing, and it was funny, I was just, while you were speaking, I was looking at my wall, and every picture I have up there, some of the really great people, but some of people that I've met in my life, I've always, I've been very particular about who I would associate with, because I always look for greatness in people, and when I didn't see it, I was many times I moved on. It's all about from day one, even when I was a teacher, here's the deal. It's the look in the eye. When they look you in that eye and they have that look, and I'm looking at Mike Tyson, I'm looking at Schwarzenegger, I'm looking at one of our Marines that works for us, that picture, that look in their eye tells me that they're willing to go as far as it takes to do what needs to be done. And very few people will do that. And the great ones that I've met have had that look. I don't care if they're big as a house. I don't care if they bark like a lion, roar like a lion. It doesn't matter. It has to be in those eyes, that look, that they're willing to pick it up, ruck up, and go. And that is, I think, all the rest will follow. Genetics, yes, we need that. Yes, we need good diet. Yes, we need good training. But if you don't have the look in that eye, that heart to back it up, saying you're going to have to kill me to beat me, I think they'll all fall in the bell curve of just average. They won't be those great ones, the great ones that I think I've seen.
Well, there's, you know, the world now seems like to run on mediocrity, and what we do, you know, I mean, face it, you know, people don't realize lifting stone, whatever you're into, it's not an easy thing to do. And you know, some are better, obviously, than others, but it takes a lot of grit and a lot of gumption to go in there and go after these dreams that we all have. And you got to, it's like a constant fight with everything. You know, I mean, I'm a rookie to what you are with business. But I know in the last almost 3 years, man, every day is almost like a slugfest with everything. And you want to enjoy everything, but you're, like right now, I'm one guy. So I'm trying to handle right now multiple tasks and keep my head floating above water. And I've told people on other shows too, when I've talked to Bert especially, after a while, no matter what it was, just doesn't seem to take you down anymore. Yeah, you get popped back, but you pop them twice as hard coming forward. And I found that things that used to bother me don't bother me anymore. People that used to bother me don't bother me anymore. And even when I get upset with somebody now, I get rid of it quick because I just discovered two things about me lately. Number one, I'm not the center of the universe anymore. I've got two businesses I'm trying to make. Well, I won't even say try because that's not a word I like to use. Two businesses that are going to evolve into something that I have no even idea what it's going to be. And second of all, if I'm wasting my time worrying about what other people think or say or do to me, and I don't like people screwing around me, but that's the way it is at times, then I'm not concentrating on my business because I'm putting my energies into something that I have no control of. So I found that out with me more than anything. But I will say this, the bottom line is I like being the well-rounded guy, but the nucleus of my experience right now is out in that weight room. And that weight room, other than my mother and father, have taught me things that no one could ever teach me. Other than if I was with somebody that was such a mentor that has been, you know, that I'm basically hanging with, that's the only way. But I feel for anybody that wants to really make it in this world, you need to go out and get a little bit of iron, as they say, in your blood. So I'll give that to you, Richard.
Well, I think you have to have – You can't be all things to all people. I found that out right. As part of some of my triumphs and failures in my life. And yep. You have a certain bandwidth that you operate in, and it only you can only deal with a certain amount of things effectively. If you start going outside that bandwidth, you're running into all kinds of problems that you're being over frustrated or you're just pecking away at something and not driving through it. A great story, I think, is in the Arctic, they have terrible times with mosquitoes, and they actually are able to kill animals by just so many mosquitoes clustering around, let's say, a caribou. But if all you'd have to do is to move up a hill a little bit where there's a little bit of wind, the mosquitoes are blown away, and then you could take your time to look at that situation and pick through and kill either the few mosquitoes that are around you, not the horde and just swat at them, or be so rattled that you make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to step back and you have to assign or delegate to other people. You have to say, okay, if you ask me about CrossFit, that is not my strongest suit. I understand it in different ways. It's been the components of it have been around for many years, how the rep system and how the workouts work. I could go through that, but on other things I stand very strong. You could ask me to design something you call me up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and by 8 o'clock I'll have a rough concept design of how to make something that never existed. If you could explain to me what you want, there's we have certain strengths that we have to really finally hone, and there's other things that we have to, as you said, sometimes let go or expand to be covered as you would cover them. The hard thing is, as you grow, there's only one you. And even in lifting, you could get two brothers and identical twins, and one of them might turn out to be a great person, and one might turn out to be a bum. It's all how they perceive. I had to have my bandwidth open to listen to what Anthony was had to say or was doing, or Desi, or Shaw, or Dave Draper. All I knew him as was Big Dave. He was a hell of a well-built guy with snow-white hair, and everyone looked up to him, but he was just Big Dave. He wasn't the Dave Draper we know today. So you have to open your bandwidth as far as to take in those things that are important to you. You have to be around, if you want to be great, you have to be around greatness. You have to see it. You have to be able to identify what you're seeing. Is this great, or is it something that's mediocre or halfway done, or is it just a gimme? The guy happens to be 7 feet tall and he could drop a ball in a basketball hoop.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I think you're touching on that have molded my life somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, what you surround yourself with, whether your environment, well, and people are going to be your environment, that's really going to be your make or break with everything. And not enough people understand that. And what I think so unique about lifting and building equipment and you know, with the podcast and making goals and lifting big stones, et cetera, I think that what separates a lot of us from, you know, just people that want, well, I guess they'd say it's not bad. I mean, a lot of people conform to things they don't want to, or because out of necessity, obviously, they got to make a living. Some people just will not stretch and never will stretch. They're going to complain, and moan and groan. And what I found, too, now is I think I just operate at a whole different level than I used to. It's hard for me to explain, and you've probably been through it. You change in a different way. You know, I can't put my finger on it, but I am definitely not the guy I was 3 years ago. And I think I've made such improvement. And the one thing I found with this business that I'm doing is I've become real creative again. All that stuff I think shuts down on you when you have to go to a grind every day and you don't like the grind and you got to make the money because you got to pay the rent and you got kids and everything else and you're not happy with things. And it's like, I think that what happened with me, like happens to a lot of people, lose a job. I mean, those things are very traumatizing. People don't realize that. I mean, you look at suicide rates off things like that. But one thing I always knew was I always had that backbone in me where my father, you know, being they're all Italians and they were just hard asses about everything. And my father was always very hard on me, you know, being the oldest, you know, he wanted the best for me. And when you're a kid, you don't always understand things like that. You can't figure it. But I'll tell you what, if it wasn't for my dad being such a hard ass on me, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. With all the stuff that happened, I could have easily just broke, turned tail, and just dove into a hole. See, those things that he instilled in me stopped me. It would not allow me to ever act like that because I could never live with myself if I did. And it's the same thing with this. Most people by now maybe have thrown the towel and said, hey, you know what? If they're measuring you on money, you're a failure, because most people love to do that. But if they measure me on what I've done on my own and grit, I got an A-plus here in my opinion, and I've had other people say that to me too, and I'm very proud of that. So I think our surroundings, who we associate with, can really make a big mark on what we become in life.
I think you. Each person, I think, is presented with opportunity. I think some people are able to see that opportunity and follow through with it, even if they only have basic skills. And there's some that, as I said, with a bell-shaped curve of life, there's going to be many that, unfortunately, are going to fall by the wayside. Those are the ones, if they want to be helped, I'd love to help. There's some that that are beyond. You have to surround yourself with the best possible people to become a great person. You have to.
Correct.
You have to help the weaker ones always, but you don't have to live at a level of negativity. It's not the way. If I wasn't inspired or I didn't let in these people into my lives or I didn't take a trip, let's say, by a train to York at 13 years old, to watch the Nationals powerlifting and visit the New York gym and do all these things, but the normal young kids wouldn't do, I probably wouldn't be in the place I am right now, enjoying the fruits of my labor or fruits of their labor. At the old-time strongman dinner, I often wondered, yes, all the men got together and they were the greats, and I was so honored to be there. But they looked at me as a young kid on the block, and I looked at them as my heroes.
Yep.
But you have to realize, when I honor them, and they only honor themselves as far as their as friends in their group, their peers, when they die out, that is history that is erased. for yep. things to go on. The old have to reach out to the young have to reach out to the old to yep. hand these things off. Your father handed great things to you, and you decided to accept them. There's many people that have been offered many things by their parents and just walked away from it or say, well, I'll do it on my own. Well, mm-hmm. that's right, and it's wrong as well. There's if I know there's a 50% chance of you being hit on crossing the street today, it is my obligation as a father to tell you as my son, think about this before you go and do what you want to do. It's a lot of mentoring. It's not giving instructions or I'll beat your butt if you don't do this. I got plenty of that, but I never yep. understood it. If you yep. told me the first time I understood that if I worked real hard and I was real smart, I could have the barbell rifle or whatever I wanted from that hard work to profit from it, that's all you needed to tell me.
Yep.
So it has to come in a way that you, as a whatever age level you're at, you could perceive it being important. Mm-hmm. You telling me that I have to go read a book on geography, and if I get a bad grade, I'm going to get a whipping, yeah. is not in my wheelhouse. I don't understand. I either dislike geography or I don't see the use of it. But if you tell me, if you study geography, that one time in your life you're going to be able to travel all over the world and enjoy what you've learned and seen in a geography book, where do I sign up? See,
yeah.
it's how things are put out. Or if I saw a man doing great things, which I think we're getting to some of the greatest lifts that were considered of all time, I was lucky enough yep. to be a personal witness to, and how that probably for decades later changed my life or inspired me. It was like liquid gold being poured into my hands. It's like nothing else. You could hear the story 50 times, but yep. be there, the sights, the smells, the everything about it was what has made iron history in my life move on.
That's and you know, I don't know if people, you know, when you said the sights, the smell, I don't know if people even do that anymore. I mean, that is so paramount. But let's talk about some lifters that you really liked and enjoyed and people you known. Let's talk about Olympic lifting first, if you want. It doesn't matter. You can go with it, whatever your route. Tell me one of your favorite lifters and the lift you've seen that person doing. Have you met him in person?
The probably the one that moved my life most was Bob Bednarski.
Okay.
I would go to York quite frequently, and every year I would make a pilgrimage to the York picnics. And when Bob came, was just a teen, he just barely turned 20, I guess, and he came out of Woonsocket, Rhode Island, with another lifter, Jerry Ferrelli, invited to the York picnic to just do some demonstration lifts. Well, it all came down that on the picnic stage in Brookside Park, it was just a throwdown. You roll the bar out, and I snatched 300, and anyone wants to do more, come up and do it. Well, it came down to a battle between Bednarski and the living legend, Bill March.
I was going to ask if you ever met Bill March.
Yeah, and he was a fantastic lifter, and actually he was a combination of a bodybuilder and a weightlifter together. When they took the press away, which was his strongest point, I think he kind of fell by the wayside because his pulling wasn't on par with his pressing. Mm-hmm. But they went for this kid from out of Rhode Island matched lift for lift with Bill March, and Bill March did some of his best unofficial lifting that day. I took films of it.
Wow.
And it was fantastic. I was just out of my mind to see somebody have that much energy. And then I started following Bednarski, going to his meets. And he, I remember he set a world's record, and as he stood backstage, he broke the American record in the clean and jerk. It was 4:44 by Dave Ashman. And
wow.
Bednarski came out and took 4:45 and a half. And he clean and jerked that, and it about killed him to lift it. And when he put it down back in the day, they would have it taken back, the barbell unloaded, taken backstage and weighed to be sure it was the right weight.
Yep.
So when I don't know why I was a kid, I had my little cube camera, and I stepped backstage, and I'm standing there trembling, and Bob Hoffman's there, and Turpak's weighing the weight, and all the judges are there. And I kept trying to catch just a glimpse, a picture, to get Bednarski with the barbell being weighed. And all of a sudden, Bob turned and looked to me. Now, he was shaking. They handed him a piece of paper to sign for the world's record, or American record. And I asked him, I looked at him, and I said, can I take a picture? And he goes, wait a minute. He hands everything back to these people. He walks me across the gym, away from the entire crowd. He says, we stand by some flower, some plants. And he says, it's real nice here. Let's take the picture here.
Nice.
How could a man that great in any sport that just set the all-time American record, but people jumping out of their skins and clawing at him, take time for a 12-year-old boy or 13-year-old boy to make his dream or his day come true? No one would do that except someone great.
Not only great, you talk about humble too, and you know you wouldn't see much of that today, I don't think.
I kept up with him to his very end of his life, and he remembered that particular moment and took the time to sign. I sent everything I had collected about him over the years as my hero, and he signed it, hand signed everything, and he even hand signed the picture we took together. But that being said, he was a great, great weightlifter, a great personality, but he was a great person. He left a mark on me that has sustained me for the last 40 years. I've seen the greats. I've seen Szymanski. I've seen Kono lift. I've seen a Moran squat 1,003. That was probably the most spectacular lift I've ever seen. I saw Bednarski come back in a thunderstorm. That was, I thought the end of the world was coming, clean and jerk a world's record 486 after 43 days after dislocating his arm.
Wow.
I saw Bill Kazmaier at his best in the 81 strongman. I think it was 81 at Great Gorge when he ripped his pec. I saw him rip his pec, but he came back like a freaking animal and competed and still won the thing with pain like you could not believe, and his whole chest and arm black. Those are things that are legendary but true. But if you're there and you heard that thunder roll when that lift was done, or you smell that rainstorm coming, or you heard the drop of those plates with that metal plate would sound on a wooden platform. These are the things that inspire and excite me to do all I could in my meager way in their footsteps.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm glad you brought up Kaz. We've had discussions with different people, strongman, everything. And I had a big discussion with Randall Strassen later part of last year.
Yep.
And we got talking about Ahola, and I've always been a big fan of, like, Kazmaier and Ahola. I like the Hola because, you know, you look at the 300-plus behemoths or bigger, even back then, and, you know, he'd beat the snot out of them at 275 because they'd always say he's small. And I'd be like, yeah, maybe small to those guys here, but 275 is not small the way that guy was built especially. But here's the question, as we brought up both of their names. Could Kazmaier and Ahola – and I'm real interested because I've got a theory on this, too, we talked about. Could they compete with Shaw, Zivikas, and Thor? Could they compete today in 2016 with those guys?
Well, all of them you've mentioned, I've seen in person, okay?
Okay.
And you have to understand that the idea of the world's strongest man, if you look it up in the dictionary – strength is just applied force. Many of the events have evolved over the years to be more of a strength fitness type thing. So there were years that the events were very mobile. It took a lot of cardio efficiency. You had to be very coordinated to move through the events quickly because they were timed. There weren't so much weight anymore. They were timed, if you think about it. So the years that the lighter men came in were years that the events were a lot more strength fitness, not pure strength. Pure strength to me would be a deadlift or a partial deadlift or a partial squat or something that would be a static lift over a short period of time. If I had to run a 220 carrying a 220-pound rock, that would be a strength fitness thing, okay?
Yep.
Kazmaier, in a lot of my training, he put out some years ago three small leaflet type workout, one on the bench, one on the squat, one on deadlift, and one on overall training. And I put all my training ideas in with what he spoke about, because he was not only big, he was well built, he was strong, and he was cardiovascular and very efficient. So if I look at Kazmaier in the day, he had so many things going for him, plus he's a brilliant man. So he used any possible new equipment or shoes or belts or whatever legally to make his performance best. He thought through things. I think Yoko, I think he was very efficient and strong. I don't think he would really hold up at all today. In the New Yorker magazine, Brian Shaw mentioned that I was the one who started him in strongman. And
oh, cool!
I was very honored for him to say that. But I saw someone who was very big, had very large joints, was very mobile. He was still a young kid, so you could mold things into his mind. He wasn't set in his ways. He was very intelligent. He would watch what you say and do. But he was destined to be a giant big man. He had the height. He had the ability to gain weight. He had the strength in his hands to hold many of the implements that you see people fail at. The first thing that gives out is their hands. So people like Shaw, some of the events now are moving more to a guy who used to be a basketball player that now weighs 440 pounds and is 6'7 or 6'8".
Yep.
That's a great mix, if it just came getting under, let's say, doing a partial deadlift with 1,500, or looking at some of the events I've seen, more strength-related events I would think would be at the Arnold Strongman than at the World Strongest Man. I've seen people that won the World Strongest Man just get absolutely mashed or mauled at the Arnold Strongman, because that's pure almost strength things.
Yep.
So it depends what you're saying strength is, as who could line up with one another. I think that Kaz, because he weighed about 330 and was mobile, was athletic, and was very smart, could probably have held his own against anyone of all time.
Okay.
I think Shaw is so well built. I think if you took a blend of Shaw and Thor and put them together, I hate to see what they turned out to be.
Yep.
But I see things in them that are just made for doing any task that a strong man would be required to do, whether it be strength fitness or pure absolute pull these tires up and that's it. Who does the most wins? So I'm not shying away from the answer. But
I know.
Who was the greatest weightlifter? Well, Alexiev made 83 world's records, and he put it on the map. He was more recognized in his time than Muhammad Ali. Boy, that's saying a lot for weightlifting, which is a relatively small sport. Kazmaier put strongman on the map. He did. There's great ones to follow. How you could put them heads against, could you match up Marciano with Cassius Clay, with Clay or Muhammad Ali? You have to look at the times, how far ahead of the times that person was. Anderson pressed the world's record 409 in Moscow But most of the strong men today with a fat mark at clean and press 409. But Anderson was a great one because he did things so far ahead of anyone else at the time. He was a total standout.
Yep.
So when you come to comparing things, it has to be either apples to apples, or you have to put in separate categories what contributions each person gave. John Paul, amazingly strong.
I was going to say that, yeah. Yep.
Oh, man, he was and he was a performer, and he had the attitude. Magnus Samuelson, got along fantastically with him. We've done a lot together. He had a life other than just lifting weights. He did race cars, and he hunted, and he was a farmer, and he was interested in many things. He could dance. He could arm wrestle. This, to me, was the total package of being a giant, strong man.
Yep.
Remember
when he crushed the Mega Man arm wrestling?
Yeah, Nathan Jones.
man.
Oh, yeah.
Those things
stick in your mind as far as just neatly, if I was finally trained and well-versed in a particular event or events and won a contest, would that make me the greatest of all time? Not necessarily so. You have to weather, no matter what's put in front of you, if you're a strong guy, it'll show. You'll be able to lift it or do it, no matter what it is. And don't let us not confuse. They should – powerlifting is more close to strength lifting than it is powerlifting. Power is really the acceleration of an object.
Well, you know what I want to go ahead. Finish your sentence.
So really, a lot of times the way things are named isn't really by definition correct, but you could kind of relate to it. I kind of chuckle sometime, and they're saying powerlifting. Well, it's really not powerlifting because you're not trying to accelerate a deadlift. You're trying to move it, but you're not accelerating being explosive on the deadlift. You're applying maximum force on an unyielding object.
Well, you know what I want to ask you, and I've heard people, I don't hear a lot of talk about it, especially when you brought up Alexi, and I always like to watch Serge Redding. I mean, he was brutal. I mean, I've never seen a pair of legs on I mean, that guy was insane.
Well,
but
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, if you looked at Serge, I was so inspired by him. I still have pictures hanging up of him in the gym.
Yep.
No one realizes that everyone for years wondered if anyone would clean and jerk 500. It was not a physical thing. There were people there strong enough to do it, but it was a mental thing because it was never done before, like the 4-minute mile. Well, yep. I reviewed one of the tapes of that meet in Columbus, and people don't realize that Arnold was the one that put up the prize to lure Alexei and everyone over there for the World Championships that was held in Columbus, Ohio, the second time in America a World Championships was held, and that less than 2 minutes after the house came down when Alexei of clean and jerk the first 500-pound lift, Redding came out like nothing and cleaned 502 and a half, stood up, popped it over his head and just dropped it because in his mind he was a different spirit than Alexiev was. He had the body of a bulldozer, but the a butterfly. He was not that, as I said, would go to the death to do something.
I got to tell you this, Richard. He's got to be one of the thickest bodies I've ever, and I'm talking muscle too. I mean, that guy, like you said, was a bulldozer,
well,
man.
They said he was 5'8". He was probably closer to probably 5'6" and a half. He was 3'10". He was trim. I don't think he ever really mad dog went after anything, whether it be in training, assistance exercises, squat, deadlift, pull, or anything.
Yep.
He just flexibility. You look at the form that he exhibited when he lifted the weights, he was incredible for a man that big to be able to move in that way.
Yep. What about, here's something that we all know about, and I think he was a hell of a presser. I don't know if he could ever get his head wrapped around stuff, was Ken Patera.
Terry, I met him several times, and he is a funny guy, and he has been in more things in his life. He's lived life much like Wilhelm has, a full life, and the funny stories tickle him more than their serious stuff. But Patera, he was a shot putter. He did very well from what I remember in the shot put, so he had a lot of explosive energy. Therefore, he was good in World's Strongest Man and being explosive in weightlifting. I think he was a little tighter than the average Olympic weightlifter because he had a lot of bulk on him to start with.
Yep.
His pressing power, he did 505. He broke the American or world record back at the time. I'm not sure which one it was, but I think he still has the highest press ever done before they stopped it at 505 for an American. As all of us that are bigger men later in life, to see him now with his hips barely being able to carry him and his wrist and hands hurting so bad, I know where it's come from because he trained hard and went after it hard. You see the greats, Brian Oldfield, 75-foot shot putter that was, I remember seeing him on, there was some challenge that I remember he jerked 275 off the racks and the whole house went crazy.
Yeah.
Just because he could do it. And now, you know, his body from all those, that heavy exertion has rendered him pretty, pretty beat up. But that's the price you have to pay, I guess, for greatness or to get close to greatness.
Well, what was it you think with Patera? Was it, I mean, you know, he'd go in and bomb, or, you know, I remember reading he'd get dysentery and this, that, and the other thing. Was it just that, were the other guys psyching him out? Was he psych? What do you think watching him? I mean,
I think Patera, I mean, he lifted a lot and he entered a lot of contests.
Yep.
But he was dedicated to a number of things. He was lured by wrestling. He was lured by the shot put as an athlete. He probably started weightlifting because of shot putting back in the day. He liked to party. He liked to have fun. A little side note, the night before the competition, Redding was sleeping. We were getting back to Redding again. Redding was sleeping in his room, and everyone was in their quiet quarter sleeping, and Alexia was running down the hallway with a case of beer under his arm, emptying the beer bottles and smashing them on their doors. Now, if that might have hurt him drinking those 10 beers he did the night before he lifted, but the rest of the lifters not sleeping the rest of the night and being scared out of their pants of Alexiev made him win.
Yeah.
You get what I'm getting at?
Oh,
it's the presence of, he was sure he was going to beat you, and he made you sure that you knew it.
Yep. You lose before you get on the platform.
Absolutely, and it's kind of human nature of getting psyched out or psyching yourself out.
Yep. Did you ever, speaking of like breaking Alexia's records and stuff like that, Taranenko, have you ever met him?
Actually, I was supposed to buy his training suit one time right after he set the world's record. We had a deal going, but it fell through. He couldn't get it through customs.
But, oh, okay.
I watched films of him recently, and as far as the technicians, the two top ones that were really the best heavyweights of all time, not only through technique but pound for pound, was Karlovich, who I've met before, and Pizarenko, who I've met before.
They
were true athletes. They were 273 pounds trying, still would be the world's record, clean and jerk, 265 kilo.
Yep.
And both of them jerked it to arm's length, or they did before they changed the scoring on Olympic lifting and then rolled it back. But you look at people like that, or even – at 83 world's record, Alexiev, his best clean and jerk was in the 560s.
Yep.
If you look at every year since he's competed at the Olympics, I don't think anyone's done more than 550.
Yeah.
So they're saying, oh, well, he's just a run-of-the-mill guy, like hell he is.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the real numbers, Yeah, the average guy, I'll tell you what he's going to have to do to win the Olympics, the next Olympics in weightlifting. And it's not going to be much above 550-pound clean and jerk. It's the human, a human being, I guess, when they use a catapult type of cleaning now, which is to itself a way to elevate big weights, but not really an efficient way to build muscle. So in the old days, and I heard Zabotinsky, who was a great lifter at the 64 Olympics, he invented the change, the hip brush in the snatch at the 64 Olympics when everyone else never did that before. So weightlifting, the world of weightlifting changed that day when he won at the 64 Tokyo Olympics. So it weightlifting today is a whole lot different thing than it was further back. It was more muscle-related further back. Now it's more technique-related.
Well, let me ask you this, too. Had you ever met the Pocket Hercules?
Actually, he signed a Sports Illustrated for me. On Facebook, he gets back with me. It was his birthday the other day, and he thanked me.
What did you think of him?
He was something else. A little rascal would drink coffee by the gallon and smoke cartons of cigarettes.
Yep.
But as far as he was very explosive, he was very well trained. He didn't have far to pull the bar, and he had good mechanics for his being short. He still had fairly good body composition, decent leverage for a short man. So he elevated ungodly weights. He was, if you look at the numbers, probably on paper, he's the greatest pound for pound thing that ever walked the earth in weightlifting.
Well, you got to figure, what did he do? Did he go, was he in three different classes, as I recall, or is it two?
I think he went to two. I followed him, but I was locked into different things probably during his time. I was fully aware of what he did and admired that, but I was, as I said, I flowed through many sports in my life.
Yep.
But it was always in somehow involving strength or power production. I think power production is the key to all athletic ability or the key to all real strength. Everything else kind of is an offshoot of that.
All right. Now, I'm sure you've met this gentleman a number of times, Eddie Cohn.
Oh, God. My Lord, have I. I've been around Eddie since he was a one. You could almost see through him. His skin was so light. He started as a 165. He had real red hair, then real white skin. He looked kind of frail, but by gosh, he could lift some weights. And I watched him in all the national meets I would go to, steadily move through the ranks. And he would come out. I'd never really seen a really strained look on his face ever. I have a picture of a very proud moment. I guess he was probably, it was in the Florida Strength Symposium when probably it was the greatest get together of all strength athletes. And it was a giant clinic. It was a meet and greet. It was a total wonderful experience. They honored Paul Anderson there. It was the last time he left home before dying. But Larry Pacifico came running up to me and he was jumping up and down. I mean, he was like he was on fire. I said, Larry, what's up? He goes, I got the guy. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, I got the guy that's going to close that gripper of yours. And I said, yeah, sure. I said, we got enough to worry about here than that. He goes, no, go get it. Go to your room, go get it. So long story short, I went up to the room and got my gripper, brought it down, and he drags me over by the arm. He goes, this is the guy. And there's Eddie sitting there. And he looks at me and goes, hey, Richard, how you doing? I go, hey, hi. And he took that gripper in his hand. Now, Cone's hand is larger and thicker than mine.
Yep.
I weigh 100 pounds more almost.
Yep.
And the only time I've ever seen him, I know he had to squeeze hard because there was a little vein in his forehead that popped out that I didn't see him when he squatted or deadlifted 900, that he put his mind to doing it. He was pretty sure that he would shut it right down. Well, he clamped that thing down to within, I have the picture, probably 3/4 of an inch to an inch. And he gave it a good ride, as good as anyone I've ever seen. But he was just, and since then we've been really good friends. And every time I see him, I saw him last year at the Arnold's, and he came over to the booth and he was doing some grip stuff, lifting some heavy plates. And he's still, even with the hip replacement, just a phenomenal lifter and yep. such a nice gentleman, someone that is a role model.
What do you think? I mean, it's hard to say. Do you think he's the greatest power lifter ever, pound for pound?
Well, I mean, I saw Mike Bridges.
Yep.
If you ran some of Bridges' numbers, I'm pretty close friends with him, and I was talking to him this past year, and I was there the morning in Great Gorge in 1981. He took a workout on the pool deck and started taking 90-pound jumps. And there was only like four or five people out there, me. And
yep.
And I'm starting to do the numbers, and I'm saying this guy weighs he's a little bit over the 165 class, and he's going up 90-pound jumps, and he's making every one of them, hitting right about parallel or what people would squat now. And I actually took a picture of him, which he for years chased me after, of him doing 1,005. Well, that is like, forget it. I mean, Bridges was and is a great lifter. He went to running for a while. Now he's going back to weightlifting when I spoke to him last. I mean, powerlifting. But you talk about Cohen, Bridges. I mean, they were not little guys, and they lifted huge weights, and according to their body weight. Were they the greatest? What is the criteria? I don't know.
Right.
It's hard to get down and say – if you say it just empirically, just do the numbers and whatever the greatest pound-for-pound lift was, he was the greatest power lifter. But I don't think it's really that. Mm-hmm. I saw people do things that in no way, like the Moran squat, no way that a human being could have done that, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
That's what defines powerlifting or defines greatness or defines a man to me. To see Bednarski jerk a world's record when he never should have, was crippled in a rainstorm that shouldn't have been, but they had the heart and the belief to do it. To see Alexia do the 500, to see, So Lamar Gant, we went out all night together the night before he lifted. Came in about 4:30, and the women just loved him. And I said, "You got to lift tomorrow." He goes, "I know." He sets the all-time world's record deadlift. How could you do that? But he did it because he believed in himself, and he was just that driven and that strong. Those are the things that you don't hear right off, but was all part of the picture. How does someone squat, Donnie Thompson, how does he squat 1265 unless you watched him train? You're looking at him 65 and say, oh, okay. But you don't know how long, what he eats, how much he rests, how much is in between his sets. Does he train with a suit or not during the last week or so? All those things you don't know. That sometimes some people like myself were lucky enough to see how it was done.
Yeah.
And then you go out on the platform and prove that your training does hold up and you are the best.
Yeah. Where do you this is going to be kind of like a generic vanilla question, but where do you see strength going? I mean, you know, you're involved in everything, but do you see anything you know, we know CrossFit's caught fire. That's been the big thing for the last few years. Obviously, World's Strongest Man. But do you see anything in particular coming down the pipe that is going to get real big, real popular again? Or do you just see things kind of going its own way everywhere?
Well, I was recruited to go to Africa back when I was about 30 to teach, get them set up where they wanted to come on the world scene producing athletes. And they didn't know how to do it, so they figured they'd get some people over from America, because we had a lot of people at the Olympics, to get some programs going. And what they played over there, and they were great at, was running and soccer, because it took next to nothing to do either, equipment-wise. but to teach them how to throw the javelin or discus or weightlift was something that required equipment. So, and a certain amount of organization and technique. So what I see, it's vacillated back and forth. I don't generally watch, and I don't know how to put it. It's maybe I'm a bad person, but I competed to the last ounce of my breath and the last second of my time in college in throwing the shot put and discus. But when I quit, I didn't go and watch any more meets.
Yeah.
I was a competitor. I wasn't so much someone sitting there saying, oh, he's a piece of crap, he can't throw.
Right.
I moved on to something else immediately.
Yep.
In my formative years, I watched in a positive way, looking for positive things from these lifters. Even some of them were quite gruff, and some of them just told me, get lost, go to hell. You know, yep. You're too skinny to be a weightlifter. I took all of that, but it's what I see today. There's too many people watching multi-million-dollar athletes perform and saying, oh, he's a piece of crap because he dropped that ball or they didn't win that championship. You get your butt out there and you do it. You get out there and be active and compete in anything, whether it's tiddlywinks or shuffle, something that you can become involved. That's why I think CrossFit has been so popular, because they organize simple exercises into a palatable diet for the masses. And I am proud in one way to see so many people in America knowing what a snatch is now.
Yep.
As opposed to just a few select people that followed weightlifting. But on the other hand, I'm disheartened in many ways watching them do it in a way that is injuring them potentially, or taking the proper technique or safety away from it. Just moving is better than not moving, period. If you get up right now and walk to the sink, you've done more than I have in the last 20 minutes. So it's the level of involvement. I I'm looking at another picture that's in my office now. Here's a guy in a bar doing a lifting a weight overhead, and all the rest of the guys are waiting in line, drinking their beer, but ready to lift the weight too. You get what I'm getting at?
Absolutely.
It's not the I set the world's record at the so-and-so, whatever. It's any time that any group of people are around and something athletic happens is, I think, where the real heart of strength in sport has begun and will continue.
Oh, I do too. I think it's great when you get a bunch of guys together and away we go.
Yeah, I mean, at our Summer Strong, after the basic expo part is said and done, and we have all these great speakers of all these different types and all these world champions and gold medal winners come in, and we have an after party, a barbecue outside, and we got a bunch of just weights laying around and grip stuff, and you see who won the world's strongest man comes walking up, and he's trying to do grip stuff. I'm going, what's the deal, you know? But he was involved in strength. He bought into strength, and because it was new and novel, he wasn't afraid. He wasn't the best. He was out there trying. He said, oh, let me see this. Well, you know, what's this all about? It's the involvement. It's the cheering the next guy on, so you want to be part of something. I think that is going to carry it, because we are, even in with communication, it's not a man-to-man, face-to-face communication anymore. It's a more broad-based. So mass participation at a lower level, I think, is an easier taken thing for these times, just like everyone's voice is the same on the internet. Well, they might not know the same, but they could hit the keys just the same.
Absolutely.
You know?
But, you know, the nice thing about this is I get to, like with this show, I mean, I get to reach out to you or Bert or anybody else associated, and we get to put our opinions out there. We get to go back and forth, whether we agree or disagree. I think it's very healthy, and it's very good for people that are on the fence or they're not sure. Maybe they want to go and see the Arnold, or they want, you know, as you know, as a young man, I mean, 12 years old, getting a shot with Benarski. I mean, come on. I mean, I don't know if people are still the same in all these respects. I have no idea. I know how I feel about it. And you know something? That's the idea of everything here. It's like, let's pass the knowledge on, the experiences we've had. And maybe, just maybe, we rope a few of them in, and then maybe we get a few more. And I think that's how, you know, when you were saying the older ones there and you were a young man and, you know, they're going to go eventually and we need to pass this on. That's my whole point with everything. And I think it's vital we keep all this stuff going. And I love the idea of, you know, it's so much fun to get together with your buddies and maybe you got that challenge dumbbell out in the driveway. Or, you know, I've never been a guy afraid to show you how I bombed a lift. I blew up yesterday. We did a ton of stone lifting yesterday and carrying. So I was doing a thing where I was rolling on a keg. John Bruni wrote it for Milo a while ago, and I love it. It just stretches me right out. And there's 200 pounds of water in it. And I was like, you know, I haven't tried to press this thing in I don't know how long. And I was like, what the hell? So not being smart about it, which now I can say that, I had my body, when I pulled it, backed up against stones, which isn't smart because I pulled that thing so hard. What I did is I tried to roll it up the front of me like you would the inverse stone. So when I immediately did that and punched it up, I did it so hard it rocked me back. And what happened is the back of my foot hit the stone, and here we go. I can feel it moving, and all the water went to the right side, and immediately, because it's on camera, I'm going to probably put the video up. I bet I threw it 3 feet across the front of me, over the top of me, and it like impaled in the stones and it knocked me right over. And I just started laughing. But it's like, I think when you do this stuff, you know, everybody's always showing their best and all this. But you can tell me from experience. I can too. I've lifted stones and I fell flat on my butt. You know what I mean? And I don't care.
We have people coming in. Some of the top trainers in the world come in to visit us, or athletes, and a lot of times, we've had people, flying from England 2 weeks ago. We've had people from all over the world come in, and or let's say we're meeting with bankers on a given day, and they walk in, they say, those are really cool looking T-shirts, and what happened? We had two people come in Friday from California to meet with us on a new project. And they wanted T-shirts. Well, the director of operations got T-shirts but came back, and he wouldn't hand it to them. He says, well, you're going to carry this weight first. and they looked at him with this. Well, I mean, you picture bankers in their
shirts.
You carry, yeah. You two carry 270-pound kettlebells 900 feet before I'm going to talk to you. That makes them think twice what you're about. Or the two guys, I was going to carry one of them. But the two guys from California, they humped it up. They made it. And when they got that shirt, they earned it. They knew they weren't just coming to talk or listen or see or whatever. They became part of that experience. And when they took that shirt home, they knew their sweat was in it because they had to earn it.
It meant something to them. And you know something?
Impromptu times. When you have to throw down, not have to, but your challenge to throw down is what gives you strength of body, but it gives you strength of will as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, you got to be a humble person to do this stuff. I don't care. You got a big ego. It might last you a little while, but you'll rub people wrong. And eventually, as I always say, you hit the wall and you don't have a cheering section for you and you don't have anybody coming to your aid. And it's like, these are all things you need to consider on the way up, because the way down is going to hurt twice as much. And I've never been afraid to show you, hey, you know what? I did this, but I had to throw this thing to make it, or I pulled this stone. I pulled it so hard or whatever. I fell flat on my back. I'm lucky I didn't kill myself. I'm not afraid to show you that I make mistakes. I'm not perfect at all. And you know what? That's why I don't like what's going on a lot today with social media and everything. It's like, I don't know if half the stuff is doctored up. I don't know if these people are just one trick pony with everything.
I think a lot of them become experts with no background. The people that I've learned from that were my heroes now are my friends. And my life has come full circle. I've seen things that I could tell you that probably a handful in the world have seen. So I could pass that on to you. Everyone has an opinion. And now on the internet, when you go out to dinner, a nice dinner, and what is everyone doing in the room? They're on their cell phones.
Isn't that disgusting?
Instead of enjoying face-to-face the opportunity of bonding with another person or seeing the look in their eyes, which I say it's all about the eyes, that are they really a solid good friend, or are they just typing you something or texting you something, or are you seeing some doctored picture film or whatever?
Exactly.
And a guy who hasn't been out of his basement, farther than his basement to lift, which is okay, which is where I started. But the things I comment on and things I know about, I had to go after. I had to get on those trains. I had to hitchhike out to these places. I had to get thrown out of the York gym on a Saturday when it closed. I had to go through all this stuff. I had to be shooed away by all the greats, but I got to see some things that have sustained me. Like I said, this year I was very ill when I tried my 50th year of my 500-pound deadlift.
Yeah,
and got it up to my knees, and I just fully admitted that it's on the film. I said I can't do this, and I put it back down. But I went to the hospital, got fixed, and I'm still on the trail to doing it, 50th time in 50 years. But you have to set goals. You have to man up. If this is what you want to do, you've picked a very hard activity in life to pursue. And it's not about about pride in your own self what you're doing. If you have improved your own lot in life by becoming a better person through lifting, it's not who you beat or what record you've broken. That really doesn't matter. But the people's lives you've changed, the things you've done to make yourself better, the way you've given back to, if you do love lifting, that you give that gift to a child so he one day admires being strong and wants to be like you lifting a rock or stone or something. That's the deeper side of it. Big guys walking around posturing.
Yeah.
They're just whistling in the dark. They're trying to keep the boogeymen away from scaring them because maybe they're not all they think of being. There's some great ones out there, but there are a lot of them that are kind of just going through the motions, not the real deal.
Posers, we call them.
I don't know what that whole.
that's what we call them. All. Hey, you know something?
I haven't heard.
How many of those guys have you met out? You'd swear they had a stick somewhere the way they walk, and it's like, you know what, man? You look like a fool, and I don't care how strong you are. Or what I've been in a lot of situations. I've seen guys that were 180 pounds that have knocked a 240-pound guy out in a fight.
Like I said, you'll save a lot of grief in your life learning to look at somebody's eyes. If they're scared or they're unsure, you'll see it in their eyes. But if they give you that look, you better put your chin strap on and get ready to go because it's going to happen.
Because you're going to get hurt, man.
You're going to
remember.
And it's the whole thing. Are they willing to go further than you are? And if they are, they will beat you.
Without a doubt. Hey, Richard, I hate to say we got to call this one, but we're pretty much out of time. And I'll talk to you offline. I'd like to get you on if we could every few months, if you'd be able to fit it in. But why don't you give everybody all your information? I'll give mine. If you just hang on the line for a moment, please, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I thank everyone for listening, and sometimes I ramble, but it's been such a rich life, and I've enjoyed so much, and just maybe sharing those personal moments might help you understand lifting and strength better. We are growing every year. We have Summer Strong 9 coming up in May, on May 20th, which is an expo of strength of the greatest strength athletes and speakers and hands-on practitioners in the country. And we do this every year in lieu of my birthday because I want to have strength as part of my life. So you all are welcome to find out about it and come. It's going to be in Columbia, South Carolina. We are constantly expanding our line of exercise solutions, not just building equipment. We try to do it that much better. And if my name is on it, I'm obligated to do as best I can to follow through with my name. So I thank you for everything. And gee, it's just been a wonderful morning.
Same here. Next time we get you on, being we've never even talked about it, I really want to talk grip with you next time.
Not a problem.
I think it'd be great. All right, so this is Motivation Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com, Sorenex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Hearts Collision, that's for New York State residents, 518-477-7937. Steven Santangelo, don't forget, unleash your strength through relentless metabolic endurance through 100% pure, wholesome, organic foods. Athlete's Choice is the only product with the ultimate results you're looking for. Primal Creations at AOL.com, at AOL.com, or Facebook, STEPHEN, period, SANTANGELO, period, 75. Tell Steven we sent you. www.grasslandbeef.com. That's our good friend John Wood. Super friggin' meat. I mean, his meat is out of this world, loaded with CLA and omega-3s. He's grass started to grass finished, and he also has grass-fed lamb, bison, poultry, wild-caught seafood, raw honey, and other wellness products. Jason Fulner, too. PlanOfYourWorkouts.com. You can get that book right there, a workout book for your success, or you can go out to Amazon Prime and you can get that for $5 and no shipping. Also to StrongerGear.com. Don't forget about that. Obviously, they've been around for 10 years. They make equipment for the NFL, college teams, Hollywood actors, arm wrestling, rope, 90%. Featured in Men's Health Magazine, and they make custom hammers for Dodge and all of us. And don't forget, today starts the contest. You can win a hammer just like I've got. All you got to do, make your video, upload it to YouTube, put FBC and Stronger Grip on the subject line with what the lift is you're doing. You can go down and put more about it. And do not forget, put your email address or a phone number or both so we can get a hold of you when you win. So check that out and be part of that. It goes right through to St. Patrick's Day on March 17th. Top 10 places to build mind and muscle, that's at hellobarbellpro.com. Download that. Products that we've got to date, go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com for that. And also sponsorship, same thing with that, FiorelloBarbellCo.com. MotivationMuscle.com. If there's a specific show you'd like Richard and I to do, Fiorello Barbell at NICAP.R.com. Also, too, I'll leave you with this. FiorelloBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com, iTunes and Stitcher, give us a review. 5-star, that's what everybody's giving us. Don't forget, we're on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell, Motivation and Muscle. We're also on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. And I'll leave you with these things. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, never be afraid to help them out. Words have meaning, and they can hurt or heal. Stay with it. Be positive. Help somebody out there. Be somebody that's got solutions. Get away from the negative chatter. Go with that. As my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to someone or offer them a smile. That might be all they get that day. Look around you how many people are beaten down and they walk with their head down. It's not good. Also, if you're going to go out and lift today, go out and bend up some iron, take some stones and turn them into dust. And as our new Crusher Stone says, domination in blood red on both sides. We are domination. We obliterate everything. We don't follow the path. We clear cut it. We want you to be part of our family. Join the millions of listeners I'm going to have. I promise you, this is going to be the biggest thing you've ever seen. Believe me when I tell you, we love this. I love this. This is my passion. We're going to go all the way, and we're going to be around for a long time. I promise you, this will be the best 25 years of your life you've ever spent with anybody. You wait and see what we got coming. Also, too, I always said this, no one is going to clip our balls. And as Russell Fur says, when I listen to your shows, I swear there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. Russell, I'll say that till the day we sign off, and I thank you for that compliment. Richard Soren, thank you for being on the show. It was a blast.
Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome, anytime. So for Richard Soren, this is Eric Fiorello. We got more shows coming today and the rest of the week, so listen, tell a friend, and be a steward of strength. Don't stand on the sidelines. Thanks, everybody. Have a great
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.